perfect machine has met the perfect match.
I like your gun.
You must find a way to destroy her.
She's a far more effective killing machine.
On July 2nd.
Excuse me. I'll try.
Only one will be left standing. Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
You need a new vehicle.
Rated R.
Hello, and welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello!
And I'm Claire. In this episode, we're being sent back in time, naked, for a third time, in order to protect the future saviour of humanity from an apocalyptic global war that a previous version of us had averted, except that apparently it's now inevitable because we have a new writing team. Michael, what's the movie?
That's right, Claire. We thought we avoided Judgment Day, but instead, we're waiting for Hollywood to invent an android that can grow her breasts the size of a Victoria's Secret models. This is Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
Yay.
So before we get started, let's do things a little bit different this time. Let's go back and look at the previous installment, because this is probably one of the first franchises that we're not going to start with number two. So normally when we go into a franchise, we're there at number two.
And this that's is the true. First we do two before we do three, and this time we're not.
We're just going straight into three, and we'll probably at some point in the near future or over the next couple of years, if we're still doing this, we will obviously do the other Terminator. But yes. Until
the reason
that
being, of course, that two is really good.
Yes,
so obviously. We can't talk about it on this show.
So I just to give you some back information about them, about their opening dates, and also because there's quite a big time difference between these three movies. So
yes.
The Terminator opened on October 26, 1984, and went on to take $78 million against a budget of $6.4 million. Great return.
Ooh, good job.
Low budget independent movie. Majority of these Terminator movies are independent movies. They get made by somebody and then the studio distributes them. They're not like a normal blockbuster. They're not all made by the same umbrella. Terminator 2, Judgment Day, opened on July the 3rd, 1991, and went on to take $521 million against a budget of $102 million. Amazing return.
Yes.
So, stepping in the right direction, I just want to also point out what those release dates were. October the 26th, Terminator is a horror film. They were aiming for the horror film market. It's basically Halloween with a cyborg, no matter what way you look about it. And at Terminator 2, July the 3rd, summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
Completely different market, but transitioned with the same writing director as the original movie. So Claire, what did you think of these two movies? Because obviously we went back and rewatched them before we recorded this episode.
We did, yes. So I rewatched them both in fairly quick succession. I think it's the first time that I'd sat and kind of watched them back to back.
Yes.
Rather than just watching them. And weirdly, I first saw Terminator 2 before I saw The Terminator.
And why did you go and see Terminator 2, Claire, at the cinema? Did you go to the cinema to see it?
No, I didn't go to cinema to see it because it was a 15 and I was 11 when it came out. So no, I wouldn't
have got
away
with that. You could have smuggled
in. No, do you want to know the reason? So I don't know if this is a thing in America, but in the UK, at the end of the school term before we break up for holidays, when you're little in like primary school, you would take in like games, like a board game or a pack of cards or games to play with your friends on the last day of term. When you get into middle school and high school, you would watch a movie. On the last day of term, instead of doing any work on the last day of term, you would watch a movie. And when we were in middle school, we could sometimes bring in a movie. Instead of the teachers choosing a movie, we could bring in a movie. And one of my classmates, when I was in year eight, so 13 years old, brought in Terminator 2.
And the teacher played it.
The teacher played it. But and I remember the conversation, because the teacher said, we can't watch this, it's a 15. And it was in that weird time in the UK when movies could be a 15, could be a 12 in the cinema.
Yep.
And then they'd be a 15 because there was no 12 certificate for home release yet.
Yes.
So it would be a 15 in the cinema, and then it would, it would be a 12 in the cinema.
Yeah.
And then it would either be cut so that it could be released as a PG.
Yep.
In for home release, or they would release it as it had been in cinema, but it would end up being a 15 certificate for home release for VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And so my classmate managed to convince the teacher that this is one of those movies that had been it was okay for us to watch at age 12, 13, because it was a 12 in the cinema.
But was it?
No, it's a 15. It's a 15. It's a 15. I don't know. I'd like to think that was a different time, and today that wouldn't wash with any teacher.
No, I don't really understand how it washed. Google, and then somebody could Google it and go, "You're lying."
Yeah. I don't really know how it washed in the mid 90s, but yeah. So I was 13 when I first saw Terminator 2 at school. And that is not appropriate for school to watch.
But while you're on that age of being 13, your body is changing. You are kind of like looking at the opposite sex very differently, or for me, the same sex. Now, explain your emotions you went through, Claire, while watching T2 and why you have a connection with this movie.
I think this is probably the reason that I'm so in love with Edward Furlong. Edward Furlong was so beautiful then. He was so beautiful.
Smitten?
I don't know. Yeah, I was. I just completely.
I can imagine you
posters.
I remember you watching that. I could imagine you watching this TV in your classroom with this old TV and VHS wheeled in on a little TV stand, and suddenly you're sitting at your desk and suddenly Edward Furlong comes on and you're like,
the entire class
is
having some sort of sexual awakening because they're either hot for Edward Furlong or they're freaked out by how stacked Arnold Schwarzenegger is, or I don't know. But
in the opening scene, he's naked as well, butt naked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so is the Terminator. Like, I bet the teacher was like, well, we're in now. I can't turn it off now.
And then, I think the teachers were like, fuck it. Yeah, I'll watch this.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Fuck it. Well, yeah, why not? Naked Arnold Schwarzenegger. So, yeah, so that was when I saw, and obviously I hadn't seen the Terminator by then because I was 13.
Yeah. Obviously.
And I'm assuming that the Terminator is also a 15, I presume. I don't 18. Recall, but it must be. Oh, is it an 18?
It's an 18.
Because there's butts everywhere and there's a lot of swearing actually in both of them.
And there's a lot more violence, like physically people being shot, flying through the air, being shot, like the whole nightclub scene in the arcade. Well, in T2, it's kind of like off screen a little bit more. It's a little bit more dialed down to get the summer blockbuster. You want a 15, you want a 12 or a 15. For a summer blockbuster, back then they didn't make 18
because you don't want to restrict the audience too much.
Yeah, exactly.
By making it an 18
sales.
Or an R-rated movie.
Exactly.
So yeah, so I saw the first two movies backwards, so I guess maybe that might be one of the reasons why I prefer 2 to 1. But I think if you took a straw poll, the impression I get is if you took a straw poll of the population and said, do you prefer the Terminator or Terminator 2? Terminator 2 would edge it. I think most people would regard it as a better, in inverted commas, movie. I certainly prefer 2 to 1. But then, I can't remember exactly when I saw the first movie. But then obviously I did a rewatch of them in sequence for this, which was quite nice, actually, watching them kind of back to back. How about you? Mm-hmm.
I don't know what order I saw them in, to be honest with you. But for me, I'm the Terminator fan more than T2.
Yes. Well, because you're a horror fan. And as you said before, it's a horror movie. It's not packaged as a horror movie, but it is.
And also, in every kind of horror movie, I think that 80s special effects have aged a lot better than 90s CGI. Watching them back to back now, the stop motion cyborg at the end when he's kind of like walking towards them, you can tell it's kind of like, you know, that, what was that? The Titans movie you used to watch as a kid with the skeletons. It's that kind of stop motion. But it still holds up. You can watch it and go, oh, I can forgive that because I know what that's doing and that's clever.
Yes.
And then you watch T2 and then you're like, oh, that CGI is bad now. Even at the time, it was groundbreaking and it blew everybody's mind because no one ever seen anything like it, because T2 roughly came out the same time as Jurassic Park. And you would never see those special effects, the first impression, as we talked about in our last episode with The Lost World. You're never going to get that emotion again seeing those special effects. And I think that is something that is relevant, even with T3, seeing T3 next to T2. You've already seen those special effects, even though it's 10 years after that. You've seen it, so the wow factor has got. While rewatching it, I was actually quite blown away by how advanced Terminator was. And how, you know, especially the side point at the end. The only part in Terminator I'm a bit like, all that's aged badly is when Arnold Schwarzenegger's in the bathroom trying to repair his eye and poke out his damaged eye. And he's kind of like, you've got that kind of like animatronic head and it looks nothing like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It looks like plasticine wrapped around metal. And I'm just like, that's a look. but I'm more of the Terminator fan than I am of a T2 fan. I never really had that T2 hard on everybody else had in the early 90s. And I can't.
Because you're not hot for Edward Furlong.
No, and I think he's a terrible actor. I just wanted to slap him the whole time I was rewatching this. He's such a terrible actor. You said you weren't gonna kill anyone. Shut up, kids. Get on with his job.
Yeah, he might not have been the best actor.
Oh my God, he was a whingy. I'm going to swear now. My problem with Edward Furlong is that he's a whingy little bitch in this movie, and I just want to slap him halfway through.
No. I don't know. I'm not buying that. Maybe that was a direction that they chose for the character, though. That might not have been the performance. That might have been the character. No?
No.
No?
No.
You're not buying it.
No. I just don't.
But he's so pretty.
Yeah, but they didn't bring him back for T3, did they, if he's so pretty? And that was 10 years after that. So
I will explain about that when we come to that. there's a story.
Okay. So at the moment, I'm on the Terminator camp and you are on T2 camp. So this is quite going to be going to a good episode.
But I think they're both good movies. Like, I'm not saying The Terminator isn't a good movie. I think they're both great movies. But for me, T2 edges it.
Okay, so for the listener's point of view, let's just quickly just give a quick score for T1 and T2 each, and then we can see how it compares to T3. Off the cuff, Claire. I haven't prepped you for this, just off the cuff.
No, you haven't prepped me for this. So I would say it's probably like a 3.5 and a 4. It's not. There's not much in it.
Okay.
3.5 and a 4, or maybe a 4 and a 4.5, I'm not sure. I wouldn't give T2 five stars. Yeah, maybe 3.5 and a 4.
See, I would give Terminator I give Terminator a 4, and I give T2 about a 3, mainly for Edward Furlong, because he just drove me nuts. And Sarah Connor...
he drove me nuts, but in a different way.
Yeah. You know,
too much. I'm sorry.
Oh, I hope your internet search.
I apologize to anyone who listens to this show eating their breakfast.
And she's also talking about when she was 12, not currently.
This is not 44-year-old me having a crush on 13-year-old Edward Furlong. This is 13-year-old me having a crush on 13-year-old.
As Claire gets a knock on the door and it's a local authority's waiting to check her Google Drive.
This is not grown up me having on teenage Edward Furlong. This was teenage me very much in love with teenage Edward Furlong. It's all fine.
Okay. So, all right, let's move on to T3.
Let's.
T3 Rise of the Machine opened on July the 2nd, 2003, and went on to gross $433 million against a budget, hold on to your knickers, Claire, $187.3 million budget. They increased the budget between T2 and T3. By nearly $80 million. So the whole profit that the Terminator made, they increased the budget by that amount.
Yeah.
And it made less. It made less.
I mean, it's still, in fairness, it still turned a profit.
Yes.
But compared to the previous,
And I can't find anywhere how much they spent on promotion and publication for it. So, you know, that it could easily be that they probably came out with a small profit, but probably had loads of promotional deals that they probably got cash back on as well, and merchandise and stuff, because they
produced, yeah, there were loads of product placement deals in this movie as well.
And toys, they made loads of toys for this as well, loads and loads of toys. But the film's first four days gross was superior to the total gross of any Schwarzenegger film release since T2. And probably that's why Schwarzenegger doesn't like these movies to die, because there he's money making.
Oh, yes. So yeah, like, this is his pension.
So in the first 4 days of T3, it took more money than The Last Action Hero, True Lies, Junior, Eraser, Jingle All the Way, Batman and Robin, End of Days, and The Sixth Day combined worldwide.
I mean, that's something. But then after 4 days, word, I guess, got around that it wasn't up to the others, perhaps. And I guess it maybe dropped off from there.
Yeah, but still, you know, to sit there and watch those numbers come in. But I'm sure he got a hefty pay. Part of that 187 million is his payday, because no one else is famous in it. He is the driving force.
I know, it was a lot.
So Arnold Schwarzenegger got paid $30 million to make that, and that's more than he got paid for Batman and Robin. And do you remember the drama of how much he was paid for Batman and Robin? That $25 million was higher than any other cast member.
Yes.
So at the time, this was still the part where they thought Arnold Schwarzenegger could drive movies. Box office says no, but probably publicity says yes. Probably he did put bums on.
Oh, look, if he hadn't been in this movie, it wouldn't have made anywhere near even what it did. Let's face it.
And we'll find that out when we cover Salvation one day. So T3 has a running time of 109 minutes. That is 20 minutes shorter than T2 and more in line with the running time of the original movie, was 107 minutes. So they've obviously made a decision to produce a shorter movie and probably have less of a compelling storyline with this film. just saying. So, as always, the top 10 grossing movies of 2003 are as follows. So number 10 is Bad Boys 2. Number 9 is X-Men 2. Number 8 is The Matrix Revolutions. Number 7 is Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. It's in the top 10, Claire. Number 6 is The Last Samurai. Number 5 is Bruce Almighty. Number 4 is The Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. Number 3 is Matrix Reloaded. Oh, I forgot we had two Matrix films that year.
Weird.
Number 2 was Finding Nemo. And number 1, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
So, out of 10 movies, 7 of them were sequels.
Yep.
And 2 of the other 3
now have multiple sequels. Yeah.
The Last Samurai is the only standalone movie out of those 10.
Yes, that's correct. So, as you can see, if you go back to our previous episode, The Lost World, how very little sequels there were in those lists, and anything from the early 90s. Now we're getting towards the early noughties. We are in the early noughties. Just
and multiple sequels. Well, franchises as far as the eye can see.
Yes. And some other unnotable unloved sequels that came out that year, and we may be covering in the future episodes, or we probably are. Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle. Too Fast, Too Furious. Scary Movie 3. Spy Kids 3. Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life. Disney's Jungle Book 2. What I was quite shocked about, because I didn't realise that had an actual theatrical release, and it did. Weird.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
I thought it was straight to VHS, but no, it had a theatrical release. Legally Blonde 2, Red, White and Blue. Ooh. Is that called Red, White and
Red, Blue? White and Blonde.
Blonde, White and Blonde. That's right. Thank you, Claire. You're Freddy versus Jason, Jeepers Creepers 2 and Dumb and Dumberer. T3 currently sits at 148 in the all-time sequel box office. Sandwiched between 2023's Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom and John Wick Chapter 4. And just behind that at number 150 is Terminator Genesis. So it's keeping good company. That's obviously the fifth Terminator movie.
Yes.
What was supposed to be a reboot, a sequel, so it was kind of a requel. It's a bit weird.
Yeah.
I'm sure that we'll end up discussing that one day too. Rotten Tomato is really interesting because critics is 70% and audience is 46%.
Oh, we don't often see them that way round.
No. So, yeah, we don't usually see them the right way round. So it's quite interesting.
Mm.
So, and just for comparison, T2 was 91% critics, 92% audience.
Yeah.
That's normal. And Terminator was 100% critics and 89% audience.
Wow.
So
that's interesting.
And just so we get this in there in case it happened, James Cameron, shortly after the film's release, Cameron described Tim Free as, in one word, great. That was his quote for the, in one word, great.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he said when the film got released. Later on, he had a very different...
I was going to say, he was clearly feeling very kind in that particular moment because he said some other things since then that do not match up with that quote.
No, exactly. But at the time, he said in one word, great, because I think that he was like, do I badmouth this? But then he's got to keep the fans happy because...
And he was really good friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger as well. And I think he wanted it to be successful for him.
Yeah. I don't think Schwarzenegger needed the money, though, to be honest with you.
No, but yes. But certainly great is not the word I was expecting you to say when he said in one word.
No.
So that's interesting.
So Claire, do you have any behind the scenes for us?
I do. Grab a cuppa. Do you know what? You could probably take the dog for a walk, actually, because there's quite a lot. I'll try and keep it brief. But it's a bit of a hot mess leading into this movie. But let's start, as we always do, with the cast and creative teams. We've got two returning cast in this movie. We've got Arnold Schwarzenegger back as the Terminator, and we've got Earl Bowen back for the third time as Dr. Silberman, although it's kind of more of a cameo, really, in this movie. He was in the first two movies a lot more.
I did enjoy his cameo in this.
Yes. It was nice to see him, but it was very brief. Now, on the subject of Edward Furlong, he was supposed to be in this movie. He was hired. He was going to play John Connor. And in December 2001, it was reported that he'd been dropped because of allegedly... It was because of substance abuse.
Oh.
So the part was recast. Nick Stahl was brought in just before filming began in April 2002. Now, later on, Edward Furlong said, it's the growing pains of me. I was part of the project and had a very nice deal. But then I guess to celebrate, I went out and overdosed on coke and kind of destroyed that whole thing. But I learned my lesson and I'm back on track. So I think his enthusiasm for being in Hollywood...
And have not seen that since.
he's done bits. But yeah, he's not... I think if he'd been in this movie... his career trajectory would have been very different.
Yeah.
But yes, the excitement of landing the sequel got the better of him and he went on a massive bender to the point of getting sacked. So we have Nick Stahl in as John Connor. We have Chrysalia Loken as TX. We have Claire Danes in as Kate Brewster, which kind of makes up our main cast. The director, for the first time in the franchise, is not James Cameron. It's Jonathan Mustow, who has got various directing credits to his name. Most significant one prior to this is U571 from 2000.
Yep.
The movie was written by John Brancato and Michael Ferris, who have written together on quite a lot of movies, including The Game in 1997, Catwoman 2004. They went on and wrote together on Terminator Salvation in 2009. There's also a story credit for Teddy Serafian. Now, he wrote a script for the movie quite early on in the process, but his ideas were going to lead to the movie costing more than $200 million to make. So,
right, so they skimmed off, what, $12 million? What was the point?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that includes Arnie's $30 million in that $200 or if that would have been on top. I don't know. But I mean, there was a scene where a Boeing was going to crash into downtown LA and explode half the city. It was big stuff.
Ooh,
though his script got rejected in the end. But some of his ideas were used. So TX being a female Terminator and Sarah Connor not featuring in the movie were all parts of his original script. So... in order to keep those elements in this movie, they gave him a story credit, but he wasn't actually involved in the final script. The music is by Marco Beltrami, who has extensive movie credits and quite a lot of franchises within his movie credits as well. He did the music for Scream Parts 1 through 4. He did The Woman in Black and The Woman in Black 2. He did Quiet Place, Quiet Place Part 2. He did the Fear Street trilogy for Netflix. And loads and loads and loads of other movie credits. So he's a very
experienced. He did a great job. I really like what he did with it.
Yes.
Especially with the whole iconic T2 music, is the dun 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 dun. I really thought he did a great job. I really like his work in Scream movies. That I actually own about 4 or 5 of his soundtracks, which he's done, like the Fear Street trilogy and stuff on LP. I think he's a really good composer.
Moving on to, now my heading in my notes always says production info for this section. I'm not even going to get as far as the production because there is so much to say about just the whole process of how we got from T2 to T3. So that's what I'm going to focus on. Yeah. So that's the period I'm going to focus on and how we ended up with the movie changing hands and it not being James Cameron not being involved anymore. There is, if people want to find out about the kind of production itself, there's loads of information. This is a 2003 movie. There's plenty of information on the internet for people to find out if they want to. But I thought for our purposes, the most relevant bits of information are actually the bits about how the movie changed hands from T2 into T3. So as we know, James Cameron had directed and co-written the previous two Terminator films. The film rights to the franchise were held by Carolco Pictures and by James Cameron's ex-wife, Gail Ann Hurd. She was also executive producer on Terminator 2 Judgment Day. They had 50% of the rights each. He didn't James Cameron at this stage did not have any of the rights. He had sold his stake to Gail Ann Hurd for $1 before he'd even directed The Terminator on condition that he would be allowed to direct it. Now, this sounds insane, but you need to remember at this point, going all the way back to 1984, he was basically an unknown. He directed, I think he had 2 credits to his name. One of them was a short, and then one of them, his only feature prior to The Terminator, was Piranha 2 prior to that. So although we look back now and we go, that's insane that James Cameron's selling his stake of the movie for $1. At that point, he wasn't anyone significant. So he made that deal that he sold her the rights for $1, but the condition was then that he would be directing the movie as well as having written it.
Yeah.
Now, originally, the other half of the rights had been held by Hemdale, who made the first film. 1992, Hemdale went bankrupt, but the rights for the Terminator properties had already been acquired by Carolco for $10 million by then. They then paid Hurd $7 million for her share and brought Cameron back in to make Terminator 2. Although it's worth noting that Carolco didn't buy out Hurd's rights to the whole franchise. It was just for that movie, just for Terminator 2. So she still, after Terminator 2, held 50% of the rights.
Yeah.
Are we with me? I think we're still together on this. It's a bit, it gets very confusing and a bit complicated. In 1995, Carolco then went bankrupt, off the back of having made both Showgirls and Cutthroat Island, which did not do well for them. So in 1997, a bidding war started for their 50% share of the rights. So ever since Carolco had gone bankrupt, Bill Mechanic, who was chairman of Fox, had been working on a deal to make Terminator 3 with James Cameron, with Schwarzenegger. Hurd would be involved, but the deal would involve them not having very much upfront, but then they would get a bigger chunk of the returns.
Yes.
At that point, James Cameron was involved as writer and producer, not necessarily as director. But at the same time as all of this was going on with Fox, Mario Casar and Andy Vajner, who were the co-founders of Carolco, had reunited as business partners. They'd seen how well Titanic had done for James Cameron. And so they had made a deal with the bankruptcy court that they could buy their own Terminator rights. So their new company could buy the rights from their old bankrupt company for $7.5 million. And they also ended up with the option to match any higher bid that came in. So if anyone from any other studio or anyone independently had tried to bid more than 7.5 million, they would have the option to match that bid. So on hearing about that, Bill Mechanic, the guy from Fox, offered to James Cameron. He said that if he wanted him to, he would top the bid to try and get the rights for him. But to be honest, Cameron was so angry about Kassar and Vajna having snapped up the rights, he kind of threw his toys out of the pram a little bit, I think, and he just didn't want to be involved anymore. He was done with it. Yeah. So he gave approval to Hurd and Schwarzenegger to make a film, another Terminator film, without him. Arnold Schwarzenegger apparently didn't want to make it without James Cameron, refused to star in the third film if Cameron wasn't involved. He kept trying to persuade him. But alongside all of this hoo-ha that was going on with the bidding war, Cameron had kind of had a realisation while he was finishing up post-production on Titanic that actually he'd done everything he wanted to do with the Terminator franchise within the two films that he'd made. Yeah. So he didn't feel any need to stay on board. He had no more story to tell. But he did feel like the character of the Terminator was as much Schwarzenegger's as it was his. So he said to Schwarzenegger, if you want to do it, then do it. I think the quote was, if they can come up with a good script and they pay you a lot of money, don't think twice.
And that's why,
I mean, whether or not they came up with a good script is a matter of opinion, but $30 million is good money to anyone, I think. So
yes, definitely.
March 1998, we're still going, I'm not there yet. March 1998, Vajna and Kassar acquired Hurd's half of the rights for $8 million. And they then became full owners of the franchise and were able to proceed with plans for Terminator 3. Hurd stayed on board as executive producer on the film.
Mm-hmm.
Kassar and Vajna did contact Cameron with the hope that he would direct, but he declined. He didn't want to. So from there, Kassar and Vajna founded C2 Pictures in 1999. See what they did there? Carol Coe is gone. They now have C2 Pictures. Absolutely right. No connection. Very separate. Nothing to do with anything. So they founded C2 Pictures in 1999. They brought in a Japanese entertainment company called Toho Toa and a German company, VCL, on board as co-financiers. And then they hired Teddy Sarafian, who I spoke about before, and David T. Wilson to develop a script with the intention to shoot in 2000 and release in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
James Cameron was approached again to direct, but he declined, saying he didn't want to work on someone else's script from a story that he had originated. It didn't feel right to him to be taking his own property, but it wasn't his anymore, and then working with someone else's script. So he bowed out. Other directors considered at this point included Ang Lee, David Fincher, John McTiernan, Ridley Scott, Roland Emmerich. Lee passed on the project. He made Hulk instead. And Ridley Scott declined because he wanted to be working on Black Hawk Down. Mm-hmm. Production was then scheduled to begin in 2001, but then that got delayed because there was a threat of a writer's strike, which actually didn't happen in the end, but they didn't want to start work on it and then get delayed by the writer's strike. So they held off. Mm-hmm. And then there was also a possibility of an actor's strike. So they just worked the schedule around after all of that was going to happen in case the strikes had come to fruition. We're now in March 2001. Jonathan Mostow and his producing partner, Hal Lieberman, were in negotiations to join the project as director and producer, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
Mostow said he was not shy when he started working on the project. He said, here's the movie I'm going to make. This is a quote from him. Here's the movie I'm going to make. Here's how I'm going to do it. If you don't want to do it my way, you should find a different director. Which I think, fair play.
Yeah.
They like lay your cards out on the table. They obviously liked that because they hired him. But he had concerns about Teddy Sarafian's script. Didn't want to start filming until he was happy with it. So he brought in John Prancanto and Michael Ferris, who had been college classmates of his, to rework the screenplay.
So friends in high places.
It's not what you know, is it? It's not what you know. They signed on in June 2001 to rewrite the script. And so then Teddy Sarafian's script kind of went out the window. But as I say, he kept that story credit because of the few ideas that they retained. And then from there, that's I I'm going to wrap up at that point because I could go on, but mm-hmm. we'd just be here till Christmas. And it's only February. So by the time we've got this, I think maybe March, I'm losing track. But it's early in the year. So I'm going to leave it at that. But there's loads more information. But it sheds a bit of light on maybe why it feels so different from the previous two installments, because it is so different, because pretty much everyone who was involved in the first two movies is not involved in this one. Yes. So you've got a bit of kind of background and context to there. So moving on to this movie then, well, yes. How did you find it, Michael? What was your take on Terminator 3?
I had a great time. You know, you go in with a very different feel. You know, you separate with T2 having such a heavy fan base and James Cameron having such a load of fanboys, you know you're going to have a very shift in direction when you know Cameron's not involved in this project. Mm. I really enjoyed T3. I think it's a very movie of its time. I think it fits in well with what was going on in the cinema at the time, like the movies that are coming out around it from the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm thinking kind of like The Day After Tomorrow, The Core, Armageddon, Deep Impact,
yes.
Dante's Peak. The colouring, the cinematography, it all fits in these movies together. They're all that kind of like early naughty destruction. We've just gotten the idea of how to use CGI and to blend it quite well with film, and stepping away completely from using animatronics. And I feel this is quite a sweet spot for it. There is some CGI in this movie that you're a bit like, oh yeah, that didn't work. Oh, that didn't work.
Mm.
As a whole, I think it held up quite well compared to T2, what was 10 years earlier in developing that technology. The TX.
Yes.
Christina Loken. Fantastic. I thought she did a great job. I watched an interview with her recently and she said that she need 10,000 women applied for that role. And she got narrowed down to just her, and she spent a lot of time. They got a professional French mime in to teach her how to act without using dialogue.
Yes, I hadn't even realised until after the movie when I was doing my research just how little she spoke in the movie. Her performance is so strong that I didn't even notice she was basically mute.
Yeah, I think she did a fantastic job. I think she's better in it than Schwarzenegger is. I think she has good essence of humour in it. Like the Terminator in T2... is very straight-laced, you know, like Schwarzenegger brings the humour. But I think she does a great difference of bringing humour and also bringing the kind of like the evil Terminator, the android, in this movie. The humour in it loses me because it's very datey humorous. Well, when you watch it today, it's kind of like, it's not funny. But when you watch, while visiting Terminator 2, I forgot how much humour was in that movie compared to Terminator. And I think, the director said during it, like I mentioned before, about with T2 and Jurassic Park being so relevant at the time of their releases and breaking technology, he said he was inserting humor into it because you're never going to blow away with people with the special effects anymore. So people just went along for the ride like a blockbuster, like those other movies. There's always those humorous movies in action films. But I think they did amp up a little bit too far in this one, especially with Schwarzenegger. It comes across a little bit more camp than it does humorous.
Yeah. And I agree with you on that. I at the beginning of the movie, I really liked that they were leaning into the camp.
Mm.
It did tickle me, the whole the talk to the hand and the sparkly star sunglasses, and that it did tickle me to start with, but as you get further and further into the movie, like by the end of the movie, I was like, this is almost a parody of the first two movies, because they've pushed the humour so far. And I get it, because they're trying to, like in the first movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger wasn't as mute as the Terminator as TX is in this, but he hardly spoke in the first. Yeah. I think if I remember rightly, 1984 was still the stage of Arnold Schwarzenegger's career where he was learning his English lines phonetically because he didn't speak English well.
Correct, yeah.
So he didn't have a lot of dialogue because he couldn't cope with a lot of dialogue in English. Mm-hmm. And you see by T2 that has changed. because the amount of dialogue he has in T2 has exploded. And I think because they humanized the character, although we know it's a different Terminator in all three films, but because it looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in all three films, it's hard to detach them from themselves. So to have taken his character backwards, I suppose, from the development from the Terminator to T2, to have not continued that development into T3 would have been weird. So they had to give him, take it in a direction. And obviously we'd seen him do a lot more lighthearted stuff in that period,
like,
as well.
We've
seen Twins, we've seen Jingle All the Way, we've seen Kindergarten Cop, all of those kind of comedy movies. And I think he delivers the comedy really well, actually. But I think
Kindergarten Cop
the end
was
of the movie,
before T2.
I think you're right, actually. I think it was. He delivers the comedy well. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger does a good job with the work that's there for him. But I agree that by the end of the movie, I was a bit like, this is a bit too much now. It's starting to feel like you're parodying yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than
the
odd bit of humour.
Yeah.
Within the action movie.
I don't know. I really like Claire Danes in that. I think she did a great job. I would have actually liked to see John Connor die in this one, and maybe the future does change, and then it's just left with Claire Danes to Kate Connor. Well, she's going to become Kate Connor, but whatever her maiden name is. Like, maybe the future lies with her a bit more. That would be really interesting prospect for a future sequel, because obviously Linda Hamilton stepped away from the franchise. I always like the fact that Terminator movies were more female-centric based, and the minute they introduced John Connor, and then this one, and going forward, it then becomes about, especially for the next one and a hint of the one after, it becomes more about John Connor again. And you're a bit like, well, can we keep away from that? Like, because the guy playing John Connor in this one, what was his name?
Nick Stahl.
Nick Stahl, that's it. I don't believe that he could go on to be the resistance.
Yes.
I didn't believe it with Edward Furlong either. I was a bit like, you're a dick, and you're a dick as well.
I mean, I wouldn't say you're a dick. But yes, no, to be fair, I agree with you. I think John Connor is a very unlikely hero of the world.
When they get to the fourth movie, they replace him with Christian Bale. I do not think that this John Connor turns into Christian Bale. I'm really sorry, but I just don't believe in that story arc. You know, I'm a bit like, oh.
Yeah.
That's one thing with the Terminator movies. I've always thought they've never got their finger on John Connor. I think they've tackled the Terminator really well in all these movies. John Connor, that's why in nearly every single movie, it's played by a different actor.
Yeah.
Because they've still never
I agree.
Had...
Because Sarah Connor is such I was going to say a strong character, and I don't just mean that the character is a strong person. I mean a very well-defined character.
Yes.
She's very strongly presented. You know exactly what you can expect from Sarah Connor. And John Connor, in T2, you can forgive it because the character is either 10 or 13, depending on, like, in Terminator, in T2, we're told he's 10, I think. And then at the beginning of Terminator 3, they say he was 13 in that movie, which is a bit of a disparity, but... In any case, he's a boy, so you can forgive him being a little bit flimsy, I suppose. It did seem a bit like the guy from the local video store got caught up in the whole of all this action movie. He doesn't feel like an action hero, even an action hero in waiting.
Yeah, no, I don't.
John Connor just isn't. I find it really hard to believe that he is going to become anything like the kind of character that Sarah Connor was.
Yeah. Well, did you ever get a chance to see the TV show, the Sarah Connor Chronicles? They made like a TV spin-off.
No, I haven't seen it. No.
And the lady that played Sarah Connor in that one, Lena Henley, I think her name is. My name is, I know I'm off with names. She's in Game of Thrones as well. She was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I would really recommend it. It got cancelled, but it was really good. It also had the what's her face from the lead singer from Garbage playing a bad.
Oh, Shirley Manson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was really, really good. So, but what did you like about this movie? Did there any aspects of the film you enjoyed?
I had a great time with this film as well. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first two films, but I did enjoy it. I love that we've brought in a female Terminator, and I think you're right, in the absence of having Sarah Connor, although we've got Claire Danes' character being brought in, we've got Kate there. She's not, an established character. We have to learn about her over the course of the movie. Whereas with TX, although she's a new character as well, because she's a Terminator, we know what to expect from her.
You don't need a backstory because, for her. You just know she's from the future and she's there to convince
She's a Terminator. So she's going to take on the same role as T-1000, I think he was, in the previous movie, the evil Terminator from the second movie. She's going to fulfill that role. You know what to expect from her. So even though she's a new character, she's kind of already established.
Yeah.
And I like that they've changed up. And I really like, actually, that throughout these first three movies, they've changed people's expectations with the Terminators. Because we start off in the first movie where the Terminator... I presume that when people sat down to watch the Terminator for the first time, they were expecting Arnold Schwarzenegger to be the good guy. Because why would the movie not be named after the good guy?
Yeah, but also...
And they certainly... They present the first part of the movie, you're not sure. Until we get to the point where Sarah Connors start to die, you're not really sure
which one of them
is the good guy. Learning phonetically. He didn't speak English very well.
Sarah Connor.
And so then I liked them with the second movie. They kept a lot of those notions of the Terminators, but then they twisted it round and, he's the good guy now. And then rather than making the same thing, because it would have been just a complete rehash if they'd done the same thing again. So making it a female Terminator changes that up. And also it kind of heralds the fact that, you know, we're in the early thousands now and we were seeing female action heroes in movies. We were seeing, you know, this is the post Spice Girls girl power era. So actually, to have not had a female character in that kind of role would have been weird.
But also, this is the year that we had a sequel for Charlie's Angel and Tomb Raider, and they were huge
and
movies.
Tomb Raider.
And they were massive, even though those two sequels flopped and killed their own franchise. Maybe a little hint for future episodes, but it is a aspect of like where cinema was at the time, and they're willing to give females that kind of roles.
Absolutely. And I think had they not cast a female, because at one point they conceived TX originally as a female Terminator, but they struggled to find the right actress to play the part. And so at one point they were looking at male actors. I can't remember the list. I didn't make a note of the list because I had so much other stuff to say. So I didn't do my usual alternative castings, but I think I recall The Rock being on the list. They were going for a lot of those. They looked at a lot of those stereotypical male actors. Vin Diesel, I think, was in for consideration because the Fast and Furious franchise had started by then, so he'd been catching people's eye.
Yeah, this Fast and Furious 2 came out the same time as this.
Yeah. So, I think if they had gone that route, if they had cast another male as the other Terminator, I think it might have bitten them on the arse.
Because you're not having
that big, strong female character.
Trying to remake, because having John Connor and Kate Connor and the good Terminator, having a male would have just feel like they're just trying to remake the second one.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and also, I think it would have upset the balance with having removed Sarah Connor as well. Yeah. I think the lack of that character left a gap that needed to be filled by a strong female character. And Kate is a strong female character for sure. But as I say, she's less established. We don't know anything about her. You need the whole movie this movie basically kind of establishes her for future installments rather than embedding her for this one.
Yeah. I'm upset that she never came back for the sequel. Of all the people in this movie, I'm upset that they never thought we'll get Claire Danes back to play Kate Connor again, because I think she's...
Yeah, it would have been nice to see her continue the character.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed this movie. I got properly into it, actually, and I was... The what I enjoyed kind of leads into what I didn't enjoy as well, because I thought it was a really enjoyable movie. It was very watchable. All of the things that we've said that are great about this movie. I like the discovery that everything that they thought they'd done in the first movie hasn't stopped Judgment Day. Although I know a lot of fans were really pissed off about them making it inevitable, because it does kind of undermine the entire premise of T2.
But also, there wouldn't be a T3 or any more franchises if they didn't move on to the inevitable because there's nowhere you can go.
Well, yes, of course. They have, yeah, exactly. There's nowhere for the story to go unless they change that premise.
That's a choice. As a viewer and a member of the general public, they can go, oh, yeah, I like the Terminator franchise. I like T1 till 2, and that's where it ends. Like I do with Halloween movies, I like Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween H2O, and nothing else exists for me. They are my three movies that I watch.
Yeah.
And that is it. And you can end a franchise where you want to end it. You can say, in my mind, this is where it ends.
Absolutely.
And you know what you're going into, because the title of this movie is Terminator 3, The Rise of the Machines. You know where it's going to end.
For sure. Absolutely.
There's no if and buts about it.
But I did find it a bit of a disappointing ending, because the movie had really geared itself up for, okay, we're going to get ready for this big battle. I felt like it was going to take a similar format to Terminator 2. And I normally love a twist ending, but for some reason, for me, it didn't work on this one. That they just went, oh, okay, that's not happening. He's taken us here, and actually, whether we like it or not, we're now
we're in a bunker.
Hiding. We're not going to be in the battle. When I was thinking about it afterwards, it kind of struck me as being similar to the ending of The Mist, which I know a lot of fans hated. And ironically, having just said I didn't enjoy that kind of twist in this movie, I love the ending of The Mist.
Yeah,
but I think it does have that kind of...
The ending of The Mist leaves you shocked because he's just killed his family. Sorry, spoilers, everybody.
That's the thing. I think there's so much more
impact
with that. Yeah. This is just... That's the thing. I think with The Mist, it works because there is a big event, yeah, and then there's the twist. Whereas because with this, the twist is there's no event.
Well, no, because
that our characters
are
going to participate in.
Terminator and the TX aren't there to prevent the war. They're there to make sure that her and John Connor are safe, Claire Danes and John Connor are safe. That's there. And that's why the Terminator lies to him and goes, oh, yes, the other location, when he knows it's a bunker. Because he knows they know the future, and that's what happens in the future. They know there's no inevitable. There's no way. In T2, there was a hint that the Terminator could be convinced that they could stop it. But in this one, because the time scale of the movie was so short and the period of time the Terminators come back to destroy, to kill the team, the resistance, he knows there's no way of stopping it this time. Because before the war was brought on by them leaving evidence from the previous Terminator, and that's what caused Skynet to be built. In this, Skynet's built. The Skynet is functioning.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to... We start the movie with Skynet already in action.
Yeah.
And that's why we go back to Claire Danes' dad constantly, because he is the driving force. He is the bad guy in this movie, but he doesn't know he is. You know, the US military... convenient or not, has caused a war, and they've bitten off more they can chew, that is what's happened in this movie, and that's why we start the movie with Skynet already putting into action the inevitable, because it's called The Rise of the Machines. I think also is that for the last two movies you've been given tasters of what the cyborg war is going to be like. And you never get introduced to it. And this kind of like gives it a little bit more insight and gives it a little bit more hope that you're going to get to see all these flying things. And you do, you get all the, because they're developing all the aircrafts and stuff at Skynet. So you get to see them kind of like take over, take control. What did scream out RoboCop to me quite a lot.
I guess so.
And I really appreciated that they didn't, especially with all the Terminator films actually, they've never tried changing the design of the Terminator or changing the design of the crafts that are used within the war. They were designed by Cameron, and because they've come iconic, like Star Wars spaceship and Star Trek, they know fans like those designs. So they've never tried changing them. They've always kept in the same kind of light of what's going on in the movies and also the previous cutscenes in the previous films. So Claire, how many cyborgs would you give T3?
I am going to give T3 three cyborgs out of five, which sits in with the ratings that I gave at the beginning for the other two movies. I like this movie. I think it's a decent movie. I don't think it's as good as the first two, either of the first two, but I think it's a better than middling movie. It has to be more than 2.5 because it's a better than middling movie. And I do think, and this is something that I always try and think when I'm scoring these movies, how is it as a movie, but also how is it as a sequel? Because that's the point of this show. It's not just about, is it a decent movie? It's about, is it a good sequel? And I do think it's a solid sequel. It picks up the mantle from the previous installments. It does its own thing with it. It does change a few things. And I understand that a lot of fans of T2 don't like this movie because of those changes. But as you quite rightly said, if you want the story to continue, there has to be a change because T2 drew a line. That was the end of the story. So something, there has to be new information. There has to be a change if you're going to continue. So I think it's a good sequel and it's also a good setup for a continuation of the franchise, because actually what it does is it ends us on that sequel hook of, okay, this is about to happen and they're down in the bunker. And I haven't seen the next movie. I think you have, but I haven't seen the next movie yet. I'm sure I will, because I think we're probably, well, I'd quite like to see it anyway, but I imagine we're going to cover it at some point.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the next movie is either the big Judgment Day or the fallout from Judgment Day.
We'll have to wait and see.
But we'll have to wait and see. How about you? What's your score?
I'm also going with 3 out of 5 cyborgs. I'm
kind of, we don't often agree.
No, I you know, I do. I think this is a better made movie than the second film. No, I think the second film is such a well-made movie. It's Cameron. There's aspects of two that I don't like, especially Edward Furlong. But I do have fun with this film. I do think it's fun. I think it's just a popcorn. While the first two movies aren't popcorn movies, they're really well-crafted movies. This is a popcorn movie. You can turn off your brain. Yeah. You can let it go over you. The action set pieces are amazing. I really enjoyed the... I just enjoy it as a whole. I just kind of like enjoyed like the whole truck scene where the car chase scene. I'm like, oh, they don't even make scenes like that anymore. That would have cost a fortune. Yeah. That was a big chunk of change. I thought the TX was amazing. Terminator, for Evil Terminator. I thought she brought a new zest into the franchise. And I enjoy Claire Danes and I enjoy Schwarzenegger in it. Nick, whatever his name is. Nick Stahl, I could easily replace him with somebody else. It wouldn't really bother me that much.
Yeah, agreed.
Awesome.
So that's Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines for you. Listeners, please take a moment to rate us and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. And tell us what you thought of the movie. You can leave us a comment. You can email us on unlovedsequels@gmail.com and you'll find us on all the socials at unlovedsequels.
So it's goodbye from me, Michael.
And from me, Claire.
Take care, guys. Bye.
She'll be back.